Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today. And now, the second half of the examination on depression, with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. We welcome you back to our conversation with Dr. Beverly Yonke, who is the chair of the Department of Social Sciences and professor of psychology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We continue our discussion on depression and suicide. You've already talked about some ways you can help, but are there other real practical, concrete ways we can help those who are going through this terrible, terrible time?
Knowing how to help is one of the most frustrating things of all, quite honestly. I'm so glad you've asked that. Sometimes we feel inept, or we're frightened to say something that might offend, or we imagine that we'll be misunderstood about why we care or why we're bothering somebody in matters that are private, whether it is your pastor, or quite honestly, whether it is your friend, your mother, your sister. I think we all have an opportunity and an obligation to do several things that can make quite a bit of difference, actually. One of the things is to simply, if you will, hold up a mirror to what you hear the other person telling you. And holding up the mirror would mean you're telling me you're not sleeping well. You're telling me you have no energy. You're telling me that things are very, very hard for you to do. Things that used to be easy are now difficult. And you're telling me you're not enjoying much of anything and feeling quite down. And the person's likely to say, yes, that's exactly how I feel. We might be tempted to leap right away and say, well, you ought to get some medical care, or you ought to get some counseling, or my, you're a head case, aren't you? That wouldn't be a particularly good idea, but to hold up the mirror, and when the person says, yes, that is how I've been feeling, to simply make the statement, I can't imagine how hard that is for you. It's a statement of understanding which precedes, can you imagine it might ever change? And you're pointing to the fact that your expectation is this person will not remain in this desperate strait forever, and that in fact there is likely to be a change. And the person will say, yes, I hope, but it's been 2 months, or it's been 8 months, or it's been over a year now. And then you can simply ask the individual, if you had a choice for things to remain just the way they are, to have more of the same, or to take the chance at getting better, what would you do? Well, I don't think anything could change. But if you had the choice, what would you choose? Well, I'd choose to do something to make it better. That provides you with a wonderful opportunity to say, I'm aware that people who feel like this can benefit enormously by having a consultation with a doctor. Notice we haven't said counseling. Notice we haven't said psychiatrist. Notice we haven't said depression or mentally ill. We've just pointed to the fact that things can get better, and a consultation with a doctor is likely to result in some recommendations that this person could review. And the doc is likely to make some recommendations to you, and you could evaluate those and see what you think. One of the best things you can do for a person who's struggled for quite a while is to get them into a doctor's office without pointing a finger of blame, without guilting them into it, or without telling them they're just turning into an ineffective, incapable person, but empathically. Yes, I imagine things could be better. Give this a try, won't you? And once in the doctor's office, the doctor's very, very skilled at doing an evaluation and providing care. But the key word seems to be consultation. That's one thing you can do for your pastor, a family member, or someone you care about. Connect them with someone who's capable of actually making a change. I would also encourage you, if you're trying to assist your pastor or someone you care about, it might be very, very useful for you, if you have been depressed, to make them aware of that and say, you know, there was a time in my life that I felt just like that. And I was so pleased to receive care and to discover, my goodness, my life absolutely turned around. I'm so grateful that things changed, and I'm very hopeful that would be the same for you. So if you are understanding what this is like, and you're willing to share it, make them aware that you have struggled and have benefited and have been able to change. If you're looking at caring for a pastor in an organizational setting, you might simply ask, Pastor, I know you do so much. I know you are doing so many things and visiting so many people. There must be something I can help you with. Can I help you with a mailing to the church? Can I help you with organizing something? Can I help you with gathering some people together for a Bible study? Offer. Make yourself available. Presume nothing, but offer everything. And then wrap that person in prayer, confident that God will equip them one day at a time to do what it is they need to do. And then check back with them. Don't simply imagine that one conversation is going to be enough. Always provide encouragement. Always provide some kind words. And if you can, close with a scripture that says it's not just me who is here to reassure you. I want you to know that it's God who has you in his grip. And he's promised he will equip you thoroughly for the doing of his will. Expect God to be faithful to his promise. So encouragement, help, and referral tend to be three very useful ways to interact with someone who's struggling.
Yeah, thank you for those very practical insights and encouragements. Now, we've already sort of touched on it, but depression that goes unchecked can sometimes lead to suicide. I suspect that's one of the few still taboos in our society. Nobody likes talking about it, but I suspect virtually all of us have been touched by suicide if we would only admit it. Can you tell us a little bit about suicide, perhaps? What are the causes? What actually bring people to that point in their lives?
I think you're absolutely right. All of us have been touched by it, as a family member may struggle or a friend may struggle. Suicide is a dreadful, dreadful outcome of depression or hopelessness. We need to be encouraged to understand that not everyone who is depressed is going to become suicidal. It tends to be those people who are the most hopeless, those who have come to believe there is nothing that will ever change. The people who, in fact, have come to believe, no matter what I do, this situation will be permanent, and I cannot bear the pain anymore. People begin to have suicidal thoughts when something in their life has become so overwhelming. It might cause incredible shame. For example, one husband had been embezzling from his business. A wife learned of it, and she tried to kill herself. She couldn't bear the public shame that her husband had done something so awful. So suicide can happen as an overwhelming Niagara of feelings very quickly in response to a situation, or people can struggle for years, and I mean 10, 15, 20 years, and then, and only then, move towards suicide, feeling that there is no way I can bear it another moment. Ordinarily, suicide emerges on our landscape with what we would call passive suicidal ideation. I wish I wouldn't wake up tomorrow morning. I wish the dawn of tomorrow would never come. Just a very kind of a tentative thought, and it comes quickly and it goes quickly and we don't make much about it. We become concerned when that brief thought turns into a rumination. And when a situation has become difficult, individuals start to find some relief in thinking, you know, if this doesn't work out, if I can't manage it, if I can't bear it, I can make this all stop. And it becomes relief in thinking suicidal thoughts. There's relief in imagining I have the ultimate control in this situation. I can simply make it stop. And so people may visit those very dreary, bleak thoughts late in the evening when they can't sleep, and the rest of the household is in bed, and they are completely solitary. So they move from some early rumination about death to thinking about the benefits of not having to deal with difficult situations. But there's usually some guilt and shame in the early stages, and they're deterred from moving forward thinking, you know, I'd probably botch it. I'd end up in a worse state than I am now, or I don't have the courage to do it. Or the Christian who says, God tells me I should not kill. And so suicidal thoughts become embedded into our pattern of thought, and over time, if the pain isn't removed or the need becomes too great, we move from a very fleeting thought to, I don't want to do this anymore, nothing is changing, I don't care, and we start feeling a sense of urgency to remove ourselves from the situation, and we start to create a plan. What would I do? What might I do? How would I do this? When would I do this? But there's still that distant hope something could change. God may help. Maybe there could be something, so my circumstances are better. And then at some dreadful point, a person says, I won't go on. I can't go on. And that's the language that becomes most dangerous. I can't do this anymore. I can't stand it. I can't bear it. And people assemble the tools needed to enact their plan. Only an act of God, quite honestly, would change things at that point. Suicide had, in the past, been quite the taboo. Now there's quite some international fervor about the 29-year-old young lady with stage 4 terminal cancer who has scheduled her death date as November 1st and has decided that she is going to plan her death so she has control over her death. I think that's going to be the new kind of suicide that we talk most about in the future.
And if you hear someone who hasn't gone to these lengths of planning it out like this young lady, unfortunately, what should our response be if they say, I really feel like ending it all?
The person needs immediate care. The person must have intervention of some sort. In my profession here in the States, if we are aware of an individual who is actively suicidal, we have a responsibility. All professionals here have what's known as a mandated reporting requirement. And that means if the individual is unwilling to seek care and to be hospitalized, it requires that level of care. If they're unwilling to do that, we are required by law to make their names known to our law enforcement agencies who will take them into protective custody to ensure that they cannot harm themselves. That would be the first and most difficult responsibility. If a person is actively suicidal, I assure you, there's very little that you can do or can say that will change their mind. They do require professional care. They may well require medication. And to assume that if they signed a contract of safety, here, sign this sheet, it says, I promise if I'm going to hurt myself, I will give you a call. Our research tells us contracts of safety are completely meaningless, and the only confident assurance we have that a suicidal person will be all right is if they are in a very safe environment with extremely well-trained people. So that's the first thing you can do if a person's acutely suicidal. If someone is thinking about it, very discouraged, it's important to ask them. Sometimes we imagine if I raise the question with them, I might put the idea in their mind. I assure you, you won't. I assure you that, in fact, the person may be relieved there's now someone whom they can share this with. And the simplest way to ask the question is saying, that sounds so discouraging. You must be just so awfully upset by these things. I can imagine you may even have thought, I wish I didn't wake up tomorrow morning. So essentially you say in a statement, I presume you've thought about what's very discouraging could prompt an outcome of this sort. And very often they'll say, yes, that's exactly right. And then you provide them with encouragement. You ask if they are planning something. Have you thought about what you would do? If they say yes, you're then probably back in the situation where you would need to report for their safety and ensure that they require care. The individual who has myths about suicide that allows you to take the myths on early on in the process, some people who might say, you know, suicide is the solution for me. I've tried everything else. I've gotten myself in a situation I can't deal with. Nothing matters anymore, and they need to hear from us. Suicide is the permanent solution for a temporary problem. So you look for the myths as they're talking to you. Another common myth is suicide is going to punish someone. One man had been abandoned by his wife. She had left him, and he was quite suicidal and said, "I'll show her. I'll punish her. She'll see what she's done to me, and then she'll be sorry." Usually, you lose when you commit suicide. Punishing other people obviously robs you of everything you have in this life, and it certainly doesn't settle scores. So you listen actively for the myths as they're telling you their story. Or some people, particularly younger people, in the States we have a higher incidence of suicide among teens and early adults than you do there in the UK. Suicide here in the States is the number three cause of death for individuals aged 15 to 24. And among that age group, we get an awful lot of young people who say, "At least if I kill myself, everyone will say nice things about me, and they'll have a nice service for me, and they'll memorialize me." So there's a great deal of fantasy surrounding eulogies and a funeral service and what people at school will say and how they'll remember me and praise me. So we want to listen to the myths as well. But if any suicidal ideation, even the passive kind, emerges, to encourage your friend to seek assistance and to make a referral to a doctor would be one of the most valuable things you can do.
And for those who have experienced suicide, either among family members or friends, I personally have lost a couple of friends via suicide. What sort of counsel, advice, encouragement would you give to folks who are suffering probably terrible feelings of guilt or even shame?
Survivors have a terrible time of it. You're absolutely right. Christian comfort and care is essential for the survivors. Very often, survivors imagine that they failed to save the dearest people in their lives, and they replay the last minutes of the last days and weeks over and over again. What did I miss? What didn't I see? What should I have done? What could I have done? And there's a horrible obsession about the what-ifs and the what was he thinking and why couldn't he tell me, and an incredible sense of disbelief great shame. What it's important for survivors to know is that when a person is acutely suicidal, looking at any way he can end the pain of this life, he will end the pain of this life. Some years ago, as I was an intern on one of the finest psychiatric floors in our state in a medical training program, a person was in a completely padded room with 15-minute nurse checks. He'd been seen by the chief psychiatrist, medical students, psychology residents, and within 24 hours of admission, he had killed himself. The physician said, "All of you need to understand something." He said, "I want you to hear it and hear it clearly." He said, "If we cannot keep a suicidal person 100% safe in one of the finest training facilities in the state, none of you will be able to keep a suicidal person safe in his home, in his office, or in his community." And most often suicide is a secret thought that's nurtured by people privately, and they don't share it, and they don't talk about it, and people are shocked and horrified, and there is remarkable grief after the suicide of one of these folks, and we are to expect that they'll have feelings of confusion and fear and anger and guilt, and that survivors themselves might experience some thought of suicide. It's very common. Doesn't mean they'll act on it, but it's the only way sometimes we think, how can I possibly respond to this? I can't deal with it. So very often survivors benefit enormously from Christian compassion, care, the love and encouragement of other people, and we need to know that the survivors of people who suicide do need to grieve, and we don't help them a bit by saying, get over it, it's done with. We can expect grief to last for years and years and years after the horrible act.
And I was checking out on the Samaritan's website, which is a helpline for folks experiencing suicidal tendencies and feelings to call and talk to. And in the UK, the suicide rate is just under 13 people for every 100,000 members in the population. And particularly in Northern Ireland and Scotland, it's very high. And the males are much more prone to suicide than females. And again, it surprised me in the UK, it was males between age 30 and 60 who were the highest percentage or most likely to commit suicide, which I found very, very unusual. I mean, again, does that sort of sound like the figures you're seeing in the States?
Very different from in the States. In the States, our highest rates for suicide include white males over age 80. The second most likely group, white males over age 65, as people have lost a spouse, a profession, perhaps they've downsized a home. It's a time of cascading losses, whereas we expect to see people in their 30s and 40s and 50s in a time of incredible success and ongoing opportunities and challenges. So that's quite a difference between the two nations, actually. Here in the States, we have helplines for teens and helplines for women and helplines for men. It's a wonderful, wonderful service for people who are very private and who've never said a single word to anyone about how they're feeling. And if you have some of those folks who are listening to your show today, if you would be able to identify one of those hotlines, that would be a remarkable service.
And the Samaritans here in England is very, very well known for the work that they do and would recommend them very highly.
Excellent.
And I couldn't let you go without giving you the opportunity to tell us a little bit about Doxology. Now, you're one of the co-leaders of Doxology, along with Harold Senkbeil, who has been on Lutheran Radio as well. Would you like to tell us a little bit about Doxology, what it does, your role within that organization?
I would love to. Doxology is a nonprofit organization that is affiliated with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod here in the United States. And our goal is to equip pastors, there are about 6,500 of them in our church body, to be healthy emotionally, to be healthy spiritually, and to be able to provide care for their many parishioners who may be struggling with spiritual issues, emotional issues, mental health issues as well. And so we provide a program of training for pastors and equip them as well as we're able to take the very best information biblically and from the tradition of ancient spiritual care with the very best insights from modern Christian psychology so that they will be confident in staying healthy themselves and providing care for the people whom they serve.
Now, is there anything else you want to mention that we haven't mentioned so far before I bring this to a close?
I would encourage people who may be feeling depressed to be first and foremost prayerful about it and to be confident that God will indeed equip them to move through and beyond what it is that troubles them and not to be the least bit discouraged about seeking help, but do so confidently, boldly, and with the expectation God will bless the effort richly.
Thank you very much. Dr. Beverly Yonke, we appreciate your time and insights into these very, very important issues of depression and suicide. God bless you in the work that you are doing with Doxology, also in your teaching and your work as a clinical psychologist. Thanks again for being our guest on Lutheran Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.